Get ready, get comfy for the next Nonprofit Insider Podcast episode.
All right. We're back with another episode of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. If you've gone this far and keeping up with our episodes, one, you're a rock star. We love our insiders. Shout out to our insiders. But you are in for a treat. You are in for a treat with today's guests. I'm going to bring them up here, give them a chance to introduce themselves, and I'll give a little bit of an intro. I got to give them some flowers and a bunch of praise because this is someone I've wanted on the podcast for some time. Be sure, you already know the deal. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, share this with a friend. Always very, very important. Be sure to rate this podcast. And my birthday's coming up. March is around the corner. I'm going to be asking all previous guests and all of our fans to be sure to rate, leave some positive reviews on Apple, give us 5 stars on Spotify. And if you haven't had a chance, go back to our 2-3 previous episodes. I've been talking about getting fired in the nonprofit space. We did a 2-part episode, part one, and we just released part two, 2 weeks ago. Be sure to go back, listen to that episode. I mean, gosh, when you're talking about the realness of being in a nonprofit space, getting fired is one of those things that is not talked about. Go back, listen to that episode. Okay. Let me set this up here because, listen, I've worked with a couple of great nonprofits, some big, some small, and you meet certain people that you know you're going to want to stay connected with forever. This is one of those people. I had a chance to meet them at one of my previous stops in the nonprofit space, and they were just such an amazing ball of energy. And now they are here on the podcast, Camille Ridley, out of the Southwest, out of Arizona. You know I love my Southwest people. One of the true leaders in the nonprofit space from coast to coast. Camille Ridley is here on the podcast. Camille, good morning. Well,
good morning.
Good morning, afternoon.
Good morning, Swim.
How are you? It's great to be
here today. And thank you for such a beautiful intro. You're near and dear to my heart and in my sphere here. And when you say it was exciting and a pleasure to meet me, I gotta say, I remember the day that I saw you, and it was in one of our regional meetings at the American Red Cross here in the Phoenix facility, and I was like, who is this person? He's up there talking with such charisma and grace and energy. I need to know him, and then I went and made that introduction. So it's great to be on this podcast with you here today.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I've had a couple of previous guests. This is episode 61. I've had a couple of really great guests. And some of those guests, I'll introduce who they are. They are this title, this person. And we're going to get into all of that. But I didn't want to do that with you, Camille, because you're such a well-rounded whole person. You're so much more than just the work you do in the nonprofit space. I really appreciate the words you're saying.
Yes. Well, you know, like-mindeds, we stick together. We vibe higher.
Well, look, let's get into it because we have a great audience that loves listening to the episodes. I call them the insiders. And so I know they are excited to have you here and I'm excited to have you here. And I want to get into the question of who is Camille Ridley and how you landed in your space in the nonprofit sector. But I want to start with this. Because you are a VP of a nonprofit that's bringing in, I mean, millions of dollars of revenue annual. You know, your boss, manager, mentor, your leader of people.
Yes.
What is on your mind? What is on the mind of a nonprofit executive these days? What are you thinking about during any given day or any given week as we start off 2025?
Yes. Well, there are two terms that I'll start with and I'll share a little bit more. And that is what's on my mind as an executive leader is sustainability and also pivot. We hear the word pivot, but it is true, right? Because if we get too stuck in a pathway and that's the only way, our vision is only going in that direction. And quite honestly, you know, with the earth rotating, it's not going in one straight direction and we need to be able to make those pivots. But with sustainability, you know, we have to look at where we are today as an agency. And this would be for the agency I'm currently with or any agency in the nonprofit sector. What are we doing that is going to lead to long-term sustainability? We cannot be trapped in just today. We have to look a little bit farther into the future. And so sustainability is big. And as well as, what comes with the sustainability is collaborations and partnerships, and also being under the mindset that we can't do this work alone. And if we can find areas where we can join alliances, if you will, whether that be a single event, a series of events, or funding initiatives, like let's have ourselves ready to do such a thing. And of course, funding is always top of mind, and it's not just about securing it, but making sure that the funding and the funders that we are engaging with and cultivating, that they really true align with the mission, so that it makes for a more meaningful impact and we get a strong return on relationship. You hear the word ROI a lot. Well, I'll tell you, one of my amazing new team members, Susie Hayden, she came in and started saying the ROR. And I'm like, what's the ROI? And she shared with me return on relationship. And I love how that sounds because it's true, right? We're more than just a bank account. We're humans, and there's more that goes into these strong relationships. And so additionally, with that comes the ability to be a good storyteller, a factual storyteller, right? And how do we do that and make sure that we are thinking in a very mindful and community-minded way, in an individual way that presents itself in a more inclusive layout? And so there's a lot that's on my mind, but those are some of the key things. And I remain to be strong, motivated, and mission-driven. And I love leadership because I really, with my teams, I let them know, yes, I'm the supervisor on paper, but really what I'm here to be is your guide and your coach. And I'm also encouraging them to teach me more, right? Because I do not know it all. And as a leader, I believe in emerging leaders and hiring people that know more than I know for the benefit of the organization. And so with a strong team, all of this comes into great synergy, and we've fostered a culture of innovation.
You have so many quotables just in that one answer. And so if you're listening to this episode, if you're already thinking about listening to the entire episode, now strap in, because Camille is someone that really does give you some high levels of value. And Camille, you're someone whose reputation really precedes them. You are a rock in the Phoenix area. And it almost feels like you are just, and honestly, it almost feels like you're just getting started. The waves that you're making, they get bigger and bigger. The way you talk about leadership, sustainability, even with listening to your team member, Susan Hayden, from ROI to ROR, it just shows you how valuable you appreciate growth and continuing to make waves. But I think sometimes we can lead with our jobs first instead of exploring the whole of who we are. So let me ask you this. Who is Camille Ridley the person, and who is Camille Ridley the nonprofit leader?
Yeah, I love this question, and I'll start with who is Camille the person? Well, she is a mountain seed. I grew up in a very small town in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado called Empire. If you're ever traveling on I-70, go up the US 40, headed to Winter Park, you're gonna go through the little town because it had a speed trap back in the day that it was definitely the buzz. But I grew up on the mountainside at 8,600 feet, and so I had the gift of nature and exploration and friendships, and so that is me at the core. I'm very deeply passionate. I'm driven by relationships, and I because of the household I grew up in, not only was it on the mountainside, but I was in the household of a retired Navy SEAL, and so when it came to behaviors and values and the work ethic and life ethic, like it was certainly drilled into me, right? So I say that because I carry a very strong sense of responsibility. Responsibility. And use my time and energy in a way that is meaningful to myself, my family, my children, those closest to me, as well as the community. I love the city I'm in now. You know, it's gone from the mountainside to a completely different environment being here in the desert. But I got to tell you, I love my city. I love Phoenix. And then I find, you know, joy, whether it be in work or in my personal life, just connecting with the people that share a vision for a better world. If you're coming to the table with, you know, first world issues that really will drain a person and are too negative, I can't have that. So I've got a beautiful, beautiful circle of friends, family, and affiliates that I can't say enough about, who have helped me grow on my personal journey in life, but then also my professional journey. So as a nonprofit leader, you know, I'm strategic, I'm relentless. I go rogue a lot. You know, I have broken a lot of the systematic protocols and rules in the nonprofit sector because I just saw a pathway that wasn't prescribed, that was one that would require a leap of faith, but one that seems sensible and not dangerous and reckless, but definitely something that was out of the norm. And so I break the rules in positive ways, right? I lead with my heart and my mind because the work that I do, no matter what agency I'm serving, if it isn't hitting my heart and the passion within me, really generating that ball of fire that I need to be able to stay motivated, to stay, you know, with the best strategies and visions, it has to be something very special. And so again, leading with the heart and the mind, and making sure that every dollar raised and every campaign that we launch and partnerships moves forward currently with the mission of United Cerebral Palsy of Central Arizona.
That's what I'm talking about when I think of you, Camille. That again, that wholeness. You know, I can imagine you've had recruiters come to you. You've had people in the nonprofit space come to you with amazing opportunities that probably just didn't align with your heart and your mind and where you're at that moment in time and moving forward. I mean, golly, I mean, have you had that happen before?
Oh, yes. I could tell multiple stories of that. And some of them where, as I was getting my collegiate education, it took quite a bit of time because I decided to do it later in life. And as a working employee and head of household over the years. And so earlier in my career, when I was looking at opportunities, I was turned away or told no because I didn't have a bachelor's degree at that time, but I had up to 5 years into the nonprofit sector, and my deliverables and documented outcomes were clear as day, and I was looked over. And, you know, early on, it really, I took it very hard and it really hurt me. But, you know, then I came to the mindset of, well, this agency does not need me at this moment in time, and I will be brought together with an organization that will see beyond that and see the potential. And so, and that was early before my degree was concluded, but it was definitely a stopping point and an area of frustration. But, you know, it is what it is here in the world of business.
Absolutely. And I kind of want to highlight and talk a little bit more about business because I want to dive deeper into the work that you do now on the daily. You are the vice president of marketing and development for UCP, which stands for United Cerebral Palsy Association of Central Arizona.
Correct.
Break down the work of UCP and what you're responsible for in making this organization successful.
Yes. Well, I am responsible for all of the visual assets, whether they are internal to the agency or external. So from the storytelling to the visuals that we provide, You name it. And I have a lot of nicknames and different things that people will mention about me, but one of them is definitely, my gosh, she's an eagle eye when it comes to the editorial process, because you're seeing things that no one would have seen. But it's not just what's on the paper per se. It's about what do these visuals, what do these images, what does this logo refresh, what are going to be those immediate perceptions that the general public may have in their mind. So I have to continually walk through the le multiple lenses, right? I walk through the lens of a family that is interested in our services. Okay, what is that journey with the storytelling and content going to look like? Because that's going to look different from a sponsor or a funder, you know. So I always have to put on about 10 to 15 different hats in any given day, depending on the type of content I'm creating. And it's all about writing. It's all about seeing the vision, being that visionary, being the strategist. And so I oversee all of the visual assets, print and digital. And I oversee a small marketing team with our marketing manager, Dave Santa Cruz. And we've got our two wonderful marketing interns that are serving us this semester, because we really do believe in the value of helping to coach and grow our future workforce and our future leaders. So that is a key part of my responsibility. But then, in addition to that, of course, I'm on the development or sales side of the house, right? So marketing and sales, if we talk for-profit lingual. And responsible for really putting together the strategy and the vision for our fundraising each year. And our team is typically assigned to about $3.5 to $5 million in revenue a year, depending on whether or not we're in blue sky or gray sky fundraising. And that tends to, you know, be geared around the government, state, and local funding that we have with the DDD and other sources. So you never know at any given day. You know, today the team may have down on paper that we need to raise 3.5 million, but we may have a shortfall where we have to activate. So I really have to be thinking in a lot of different capacities, from discovery to then getting into cultivation and making sure stewardship and solicitation all haps as a part of the donor cycle, right? And so I'm thinking about a gazillion different things all throughout the day, and it's crossing from marketing into sales. And so I think that is going to give you a nutshell of what it looks like. It's wild. It's wild. But my mind, I surprise myself on certain occasions, because these great ideas will come out of nowhere, even in the midst of all of these other moving parts that are taking place. And I don't know, I've just always been a creative. I am an artist, from a visual artist, but now I've been able to do that again on the branding, the marketing, from our videos, podcasts, you know, all of the creations we have. And it's just, you know, artistry in a different capacity.
And I'm glad you started with marketing and ended with the money piece a little more, because I want to stick with money just a little bit, because any organization that brings in, honestly, $1 million is freaking impressive. But when you're talking 3, 4, 5+ million dollars, the way you and your team are doing, I mean, that could be considered very successful. So give our audience a breakdown of what it takes to bring in that much money a year, because you obviously you aren't doing it by yourself. You got your team, you've got all types of people that are part of this, but you're a big part of the equation. You're a big piece of this, in terms of leading the direction that the organization travels year after year. Give our audience a breakdown of what it takes to even bring in that type of money.
First of all, being human and meeting other humans where they're at, right? I consider us to be financial advisors in a lot of ways. And it boils down at the very beginning, the start is relationship. The second part of that is relationship, and the third part of that is relationship. You know, when we it truly is, you know, our approach is not looking at people as ATMs. I know that's an old adage, it's kind of outdated now, but it's true. It's like, these are humans, and We need to meet them where they're at, seek to understand what their philanthropic goals are just as a whole. Because yes, we know what money we need to raise and for which programs and services we need to raise it for, but I like to step back and try and figure out wherever we can, as we are going through that discovery and prospecting cycle, to really find out more about the individual. And so that connection's important. And sometimes, that process can be slower than others, but it's no different than getting to know your family members at family gatherings, whether that be a graduation, a birth, a holiday, whatever the case may be, and slowing it down and starting with that getting to know you process. That in itself lays such strong groundwork because it makes an individual feel like they are being heard, that they are important, and that their dollars are going to go somewhere that they are just so happy for them to leave their hand and come into a mission. And so that is where I would say the biggest part of the success in the fundraising efforts that I have engaged in and with teams that I have led. Oftentimes in roles I have played in the past, it was all about, no, you need to ask these people right now on this given day at this time for these dollars. And I went into those meetings knowing, wait, the vibe is not leading in that direction. If I make this ask right now, we will lose them forever. And so it really, again, is really being aware, reading your room, reading the person. And that can be digital, right? Or it could be on the telephone. It can be in person. So, but making those connections and then customizing a proposal or a pitch that does speak to their key interests. Now, granted, we don't always have the opportunity to have those connections and one-on-one with everybody, right?
Yes.
But when we're looking at those bigger dollars of revenue, the $500,000, commitments that we get, the $250,000 commitments that we get, the 200,000, 175, on those, it all takes that deeper connection. And it really works because it is about who the spokesperson is, who's delivering the messages and communications, and people will pick up on if you're too scripted, and they will understand that you are uncomfortable in the role that you're doing, and then it becomes awkward. There's one thing, and I've led many of these kinds of discussions on the fear of fundraising. And honestly, I guess I have a little conflict with that because I wish that in the nonprofit sector, when we're talking about what is a fundraiser, that we say this is a salesperson. So you have got to be able to be comfortable with going in and making asks, right? And so nonetheless, oftentimes when you are taking the time to learn and hear from those potential donors, you don't even have to ask half the time. They start to say, wait a minute, we've heard some great things that you've told us with passion. How can I help? And that's ideally how you want it to go. But again, investing in that. When we're talking about those individuals that we may not be able to get FaceTime or phone time with, we got to do that in a way that is done in a digital storytelling type of a way that is also compelling and speaking to the individual as much as we can. So with that, we've been able to get some big deals. But it's also, I spend quite a bit of time out in the community, spending time in spaces where I know certain individuals or organizations may be, hanging out at, and see where I can without being invasive, and rude, but starting to get my face, seen and known and starting to build rapport. And I've done that, a great deal here. In Phoenix. And that is where the results are coming from, but we're also, behind the scenes digging and trying to figure out which companies are coming into town, which foundations are there that we may not have even thought about or knew about. So we are doing a lot of that discovery work behind the scenes and putting together some strategy. I'm not a fan of cold outreach. When we're talking about contacts, because it doesn't necessarily seem to move forward. So we want to be very intentional and try and build up the pipeline so that we can get out to those warm contacts. One other thing I'll mention on this is
Please.
at UCP, we just put together, and this is a little a brainchild that I had along with our board of directors, and that was to create a philanthropy task force so that it isn't as structured and stringent as, say, a committee would be for this. So we've got a task force, and these are individuals that are going to help us with opening doors. We need those door openers, right? We need those people that can give us an introduction at the highest of levels so that we can get in there and do our pitches. And so, that series of efforts helps to make the magic happen.
I'm getting excited. Seriously, just talking to you, you could talk for another 10 minutes straight.
Yes, I
I want to, because it's so good. Honestly, I want to interject because I've had a couple of other folks, fundraisers that have been on the podcast. Shout out to Jen Tudor and Meredith Whitaker. And I've asked them both if relationships is a stereotypical part of fundraising. Like, is it really, how important is relationships? Is that just something fundraisers say? And they've all said, no, Swim, it is paramount. It is the cornerstone of the work you do. So I love that you really doubled down, because I'm hearing it over and over again. And honestly, I love that you even just went the way you started the question, where you said being human. I haven't heard anything like that, but the way you deliver it, Camille, it really hit home for me. And I think it hit home for our audience of knowing, like, oh, I know exactly what she means. I just want to, real fast, because we got a commercial here. I want to take it in a quick second. Is that an idea of being human? Again, it sounds so simple to say, but I know it's none of those things that's not that simple, because you've probably developed that feeling over years. Have you been saying that long? Has that always been the idea that you've had of just being human?
I love that question, because I'm going to my Instagram to let you know when I coined it, but I think it has been in me just by birth. I'll thank my mother for, having such great fundamentals and humanness in how I was brought up and raised. But there was a period in time where I was on vacation, and I cannot recall. This might have been on the plane or back when I was in South Africa a few years ago. And I decided to kind of really coin in my life like the concept of being human. And in fact, I can get real specific here. On January 6th of 2023, I did an Instagram post that says "Be human," and I talk about is that too much to ask, right? And so since then, I use the word human a lot, and people are like, oh gosh, what's up with that? But we're humans. I'm a humanitarian, and human being all in caps, etarian, right? So yeah, because we are, and we got to meet each other where we're at, where the person's at. We don't, there isn't a cookie cutter, black and white approach to every human because they're different. And that is a very important concept when we are fundraising, when we are on sales teams, to take that into account. But there's always going to be that pressure of we got to get that money today and now. Why isn't it coming? And as I have been able to grow in organizations and show them, like if we go for with that approach versus I'm just going to go and ask them, even if this is not the time for them, and even if this isn't meeting them where they're at, we're going to cause more problems in that direction. And so when I had talked earlier about kind of being a rebel or a renegade when it comes to how the flow of making ass and the whole, donor journey is, I'm like, I disagree with that because that's not how it happens in life. And it's really kind of also with the dating concept. Are you going to go in and just ask them for all to get married the first day? I don't know, maybe you will, but you're going to take time to build that relationship.
Yes. Whew. If you haven't hit the share button yet, hit the share button now. I don't care who you are. Take this time. You know someone in the nonprofit space. You haven't even heard the second half of this interview. Share this with someone right now. So we're going to take a quick pause, Camille.
All
I want
right.
to jump back into to more of the work you do
Okay.
with United Cerebral Palsy. So let's take a pause. We'll
All
come
right.
back. Don't go anywhere, folks. Stay tuned. Camille is on an absolute roll. Keep listening. The second half of this podcast interview is amazing. And look, spring is officially here. This is the time of the year where we start anew. Spring cleaning, spring ideas, maybe you're manifesting, putting out your vision boards. This is the time. And I need you to do me a favor. I need you to rate this podcast. You like what you're hearing. You enjoy what you're hearing. This is the time where, gosh, 2 years into the Nonprofit Insider Podcast, 61 episodes. We keep bringing you high-level guests like Camille, and we're paying these high-level guests. When you have an opportunity to break bread, you kind of do what you can. So be sure to rate this podcast. Share it with a friend. Just one friend. That's all you got to do. Just share it with one friend in the nonprofit space. They are going to love what Camille's saying. They're going to love what our future guests are saying. So go ahead and do that right now. Let's get back to that episode. All right, listen, did you hit the save button? Because I don't think you hit the save button or the share button. I don't think you hit the share button. That's how excited I am. I'm missing my words here. Hit that share button, share with someone else. Once again, I am back, joined with Camille Ridley, the Vice President of Marketing and Development for United Cerebral Palsy Association of Central Arizona. She's based out of the Phoenix, Arizona area. But gosh, she told us a really good insight being from Empire, Colorado. Shout out to Empire. Backgrounds in the family. So Camille's really got everything going on. And Camille, you know, a big piece of the work you do is advocacy.
Yes.
Of course, when you're out and about, you're meeting people, you're networking and things like that, you probably start with, "Hi, I'm Camille Ridley. I'm the financial lead for my organization. I'm Camille Ridley. I am the VP of marketing development." Mm-hmm. But there is a part of your role mm-hmm. that is baked into advocacy for special needs.
Yeah.
What does the advocacy work look like for you and your team, Camille? Share that with us.
Yes. Well, you know, advocacy is big because our voices, no matter whose voice it is extremely powerful, and especially when you're using it for good. And so, you know, it is a huge part of the work we do, because real change does not happen solely in the programs we provide. It happens in the policies, the workplaces, in the communities that we are serving. And so advocacy for me and my team looks like educating our organizational stakeholders, decision makers across the community on why investing in disability services truly does matter. Because this it's a thing that, or, you know, in a mindset that many of us have, because we are human, right? Is that, wait a minute, I don't have a child or a family member in the household that may need that may have a special need. But if we think about and paint the picture, well, what about your neighbor? What about a cousin? What about an aunt? What about a colleague? We are all touched and interact with these individuals. And so advocacy is also painting that picture and educating people on that very subject matter. And it does happen on every level, whether that's working with our local state government to improve accessibility and transportation, or partnering with businesses to create a more inclusive hiring practice. An example would be our newly opened Life Empowerment Career Center, which is nestled into our Arizona Ability Adult Day Program. So making sure that we are partnering with businesses. So no, like, we have great individuals that are wanting to work and that we think could be a good fit here. What can we do to make that happen? You know, it's all about shifting mindsets and breaking barriers so that people mm-hmm. with disabilities can fully participate in society. Because even though we are here in 2025, the disability community is still in quite significant civil rights movement of modern day time. There's accessibility that we see, but is it its full scope? Absolutely not. And you could talk to anyone who travels and the difficulties that may ensue there. So again, yeah, we really want to educate, and we want to push for any chance we can with those policy and decision makers why we need to have a certain level of support around that.
And again, I think it really does go back to the wholeness, not only that you represent, Camille, but that really we're all trying to see within ourselves and in a greater world. Because can I ask you about language for a
Yes.
second? Because language really does matter. And I recall, I don't know if I told you this story, but I used to work with the Autism Society of North Carolina when I was post high school, a little college, even in after college. And one of the things that forever stuck with me is, this is not an autistic person. This is a person
No.
with autism. Even just slight changes like that. And I want to be clear because I want to be sure to let the audience know, you alone do not speak for individuals with special needs, right? I mean, just like I cannot speak for all Black people in America. But when you're in the nonprofit space and the work that you're doing and the way that you value the mission, we know that there's certain levels of questions and insights that you're really able to share with our audience. And when it comes to language, it's like the bare minimum levels of respect. And so I want to ask, from your point of view, does the general public use the right language when it comes to special needs? And have you seen improvements as a society when it comes to that language in the fashion that you like?
Well, I definitely, growing up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and the really different language that was utilized at the time, which I'm not going to repeat on this because I don't agree with it, but particularly around the disability community, has definitely evolved because so many terms were used that were very, very offensive and that have phased themselves out. And so language is very powerful. And with the disability community currently, there's a very strong focus on person-centered language. And so some more of the terms and way that you speak is starting to change. But there is a variation because I talk to all kinds of people all over the nation, but also in the valley. And depending on the individual, they may be more comfortable and want to be termed in a certain way versus in another. So there are variations. And so again, getting to that person-centered language is about the most important thing we can do. And because it changes perception in so many ways, right? I personally like when it comes to the term disability, when you have DIS in front of anything, it already kind of sets things up in a negative connotation. And that's just my personal perception, but I am not the spokesperson for that term, right? And so it is one that is liked, and in other senses it is not. And it's one that is used, right? So I really, again, it just goes back to that person-centered language, and ask and seek to understand, especially when we are presenting any type of material or any type of communication. There'll be people that I can go to and just ask, just to get a variation of opinions on, or not even opinions, but lenses on how we're going to roll out specific content. So we have that. And then, of course, there's all kinds of resources that we tap into to be as current as we can. But it's just like when you have acronyms in a business and you've got a huge list of those and a growing list of those, it's very similar in this space. So I won't always have top of mind how to lay out everything, but we have plenty of support on how to figure that out because it is evolving and changing by the day.
I mean, communication is key. Like with anything, being able to make sure you're communicating well, having the ability to ensure that people are in the table, representation. There's a lot in the news right now, we know, when it comes to aspects of DEI representation. We're not going to get into to that today, but definitely. And you all do a great job, and I can imagine. Your team, this is something that's very important because it's essential to the mission that you all are doing on a daily basis, especially when you're talking to fundraisers or funders.
And one last thing I would mention on that is that People with disabilities are the experts of their own experiences, and we center their voices to ensure that the language we use is being used in a way that is empowering and not limiting. To me, the biggest thing is we don't want to put limitations, we don't want to put assumptions, where they are not true.
I don't understand why people can't get behind that. Again, join with C Camille Ridley, the VP of Marketing and Development for United Cerebral Palsy Association of Central Arizona. And talk with me a little bit more about resources and needs that you all have, Camille, because as much as we know money is, listen, we know what it is. We live in a capitalist society. We know how important money is, but you can't throw money at every problem. It's just,
No, you can't.
we if you've ever had relationships with family or parents, friends, we know money is not the one all be all, but it is a top resource. What other resources are sought after in your space at any given time, Camille?
I love this question because it is more than just the money. With money, we can do more, of course, right? But it's really about, having a safe place, a safe sanctuary for the individuals and families that we serve. And what does that look like? Well, that could be something such as a movie night in our backyard. There's a new movie on Disney that I'd encourage you to watch of a young woman with cerebral, or excuse me, with cerebral palsy, and it's called Out of My Mind. And so when that, and it's Disney, so you can get it on Disney Plus. You might be able to rent it on YouTube and such. In the fall, when that movie was released, we had on our campus here a family night, and it was for individuals that are receiving our services and families of community members who wanted to come. So having that safe space, a place where they can go that has the right balance of sound and lighting and activity. So that's one example, is to provide those types of opportunities, as well as also adaptive experiences. We've been hearing from the families, and it has brought me such tremendous joy and a lot of tears. I'll tell you what, a lot of tears, moving tears, with our adaptive basketball clinic. So in 2023, Stephen Hunter came to the organization through Colin Longworth, our philanthropy officer of corporate fundraising, because they're friends from Chicago, and had said, "Listen, the work that's happening at UCP is something that I need you to see." And so Stephen is one of our community ambassadors, and he has the Stephen Hunter Youth Foundation, which fundraises for education funding for kiddos with autism, and we serve children with autism as well. And he had been doing an annual event at the basketball clinic, United for Fathers, United for Autism. And he said, "Listen, I want to join this and include UCP." So now we have just completed our second year of an event called United for Autism and Cerebral Palsy Basketball Clinic with Stephen Hunter in partnership with the Phoenix Suns at the Footprint Center. And let me tell you, in talking to families over both years, they have shared with me, like, we want to do even more. We want to be able to do adaptive soccer experiences, baseball. We want to do performing arts. And so we're building that portfolio. And so that is some of the stuff that we do with Families for the Money, because it again is giving them opportunities and spaces and places where they can go and do things that everyone else gets to do. So that's there's a little bit about that. But then it's also, I think you'll this is in an area that I know that you hold very true to your heart, and that is volunteers. We have amazing volunteers. We're growing our program. And without that support, my gosh, we can't do even more and really seek those, audacious goals within the agency. So volunteerism is a huge part of the support that we are always looking for. And then the advocates, right? We have our ambassadors. Community ambassadors are those influencers that get to help us with just sharing the name, sharing the work, and getting that into as many people as they possibly can. Same thing with our family ambassadors. But for other individuals, just liking our pages, sharing stories that we tell, that's a huge resource that doesn't cost any money and just simply time. So I think those are kind of some of the key areas outside of the dollars.
Ooh, yeah, I have a conversation set for about a week after today with an alumni associate. We went to college together. His name is Pat Adebo. He's the executive director at Oregon Adaptive Sports. And what
Ooh.
they do is they're based in Bend, Oregon. And what they basically do is if you want to go skiing, if you want to go sledding,
Ooh.
making sure that there are as few barriers as possible. Of course, they're going for no barriers, but making sure they eliminate as many barriers as possible for the community to go out there, do winter sports, spring sports, bicycle, anything that is sports related. That's what they do, kind of in the same vein. And so I'm excited to talk with him because, like you're just saying, there's so many different aspects to making sure that, hey, if you're playing soccer, we want as many people as possible to be playing soccer. What's wrong with that?
Well, I can't wait to listen to the podcast you're going to have with him, and I'm going to be looking for him because I would love to be able to talk to him because, let's make these opportunities. And living in the fifth largest city in the US, there is a good deal of that happening. Ability360 has an amazing set and series of adaptive sports and teams that they do. But we need more of us, of them and us, to meet the need that we have here, right? And so I think that's great. I can't wait to listen in on that.
That's gonna be a good one. That's probably gonna be the episode right after
Ooh.
this one. So
Woo!
let me switch gears a bit,
Okay.
because if you've been listening to the episode so far, it's not a secret. I'm a huge fan of your work, Camille.
Thank you.
And I think sometimes I feel like ambition in the nonprofit space can be a little poo-pooed when compared to other sectors. You think of finance, computer science. There are all talks about AI and different aspects of that, like nowadays. It feels like in those spaces, it's okay to be ambitious. But I felt like for years, you, Camille, have struck a near perfect balance of displaying ambition without it defining or blinding you. Again, the wholeness of who you are. So I want to ask you, because I think our audience at this point, you have a lot of admirers now. You have a lot of followers that are really going to be into who is Camille really? I need to be following her. So I want to ask you, do you consider yourself to be ambitious? And when you think about the future, is there a landing spot or a role that maybe you have an eye on?
Yes to all of it. But do I consider myself ambitious? I do. I'm a huge entrepreneur in the nonprofit work that I do, but also in my personal projects. I won't go too into depth of all these business plans that I have rolled out and stopped and paused and turn them on and off and some goals for the future. I mean, my brain doesn't usually stop too often unless I'm sleeping, and then I think it's working up some ideas for me. And so, yeah, I would say I am ambitious. And I really, again, I think that's just by DNA and birth and just, the influences that were around me in my household and external. And so, yeah, and with that, I really, at the core of it, I believe in being bold. I believe in taking risks. And I love when I'm, that's a core element of just business in general. We got to take risks because if we don't know what we could have learned, what potential we could have made, and where we may have fallen, short of whatever that intended goal was to be. And so, I like to be able to take risks that lead to bigger impacts. And so with that, I'm just very big on, extraordinary systematic change when it's on the humanitarian level. And that's just been instilled in me. And so with that brings those ideas and the ambition and just like wanting to do more and more and more. Now, how do I find balance with that is knowing that I have to stop, wherever I feel in the day that this is my stopping point. I've done a lot. My mind and brain is tired, and my family needs me, and I need me, right? So I do make it very intentional that whatever time it is in a day that I decide is the end of my workday, I put my laptop away, I put my work phone away, no, letting folks know that I'm available, I'll reach you tomorrow. And so I can truly disconnect. And I'll tell you, I continue to work on that because for a lot of years, actually, most of my career, almost 20 years up until I'd say a couple years ago, where I had to get very, very disciplined with that model, is I have to have a shutoff point. Yes, I know I've got a list that's to beat the bands that I gotta go with that's in the backdrop, but if I don't shut it off and go into the Zen zone and do my yoga or do my fitness or whatever it is, spend time with my kids, whatever it is, that if I don't make a very distinct boundary with that, I the burnout comes into play. So that is a little bit about that. And then as far as my future, what do I truly, truly want to do? Well, when I retire from working for other people, I've got a lot of ideas, but one of them, most importantly, is going to be going on the road and doing what is called the Be Love Mobile Mural Project. And that is something I have test piloted a couple of times. I've been invited to do another one of those. But really, it's bringing the art of the heart to not only the canvas, but the individuals. And just in short, when I was test piloting this project at the Hive on 16th for a series of three First Fridays and bringing this creation into play, individuals were coming to the canvas and having a lot of conversation. And I hope that I was able to inspire several folks who are like, well, I'm not an artist. I don't know what to create and put on here. And so I kind of went through that kind of coaching and, just it doesn't have to be defined. Just whatever is flowing through you, put it on this. And I saw, even in that short period of interaction and time, reflection and this sense of satisfaction from the individual. So it was bigger than that. So it's about bringing the love energy into community spaces in an artistic way to continue that systematic change. So that would be one baby. And I would have myself a nice big van that you can pull out and have the canvas there, and you can have the music and all that good stuff. So that's really what I want to do next. Share the mindset of love, kind of like being kind, right? But it's all comes together synergistically. And as simple as it may seem, it's mission critical.
Oof. Oof. I amazing. You learn so many amazing aspects of the people you're interviewing when you get a chance to really dive into their work and who we are. And work can be such a big piece, but yeah, definitely the aspect of separating yourself and having dreams and desires that are not necessarily related to the work that we do. Again, I keep saying it, but again, the wholeness of family and friends and work and advocacy and volunteering and just being true to yourself and knowing that you are a journey. I mean, what do they say? The thing you'll do the longest is live. So definitely being human is so key. And look, I don't want this to end, but I want to, I, we you know, we like to wrap our episodes. We do a nonprofit horror story. I'm going to tease that for just a second here. I want to tease that because I know you probably have a good story to share here. I would not be a proper podcast host if I didn't ask you for some advice questions because, again, you have some fans now that are going to follow you. They're going to start reaching out to you. People out there that are ready to be VPs like you, they want to be directors, they want to be managers. You didn't just start off with this. You said in the very beginning, you said you love leadership. That is such a key part of who you are, and it's clear you bring that to any room you bring. What pieces of advice, Camille, do you have for a program coordinator, a financial development officer out there who is looking to sit at the head of the table?
Yeah, I'd say first and foremost, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Because leadership is a whole lot of that, right? You've got now all eyes on you, every move you make, every word you say. It can be uncomfortable, right? And being uncomfortable and knowing that being a nonprofit leader or a business leader, it means wearing multiple hats, stepping outside of your comfort zone, and navigating uncertainty, right? And that's where that pivot mindset comes in. We just don't know, like, this is the channel and the route we're going down, but whoop, we gotta, there's ice, there's black ice over there. We're about to skid out, so now we gotta reroute. Secondarily, I would say, really hone in on building your relationship network, finding the mentors, whether they know they're a mentor or just someone that you want to watch, listen, and learn and pick up on their skills, because that is how I really started my career working for the for-profit. Gosh, I started working for a multi-million, I think at this point, billion international blood banking firm with little to no experience as an administrator. Administrative assistant, and I started working for the president and CEO of an agency called Gambro BCT at the time. Now it is called Terumo BCT, but nonetheless, I started working for the president and CEO in less than 6 months of starting my executive assistant experience. And so I was very uncomfortable all the time, but I watched David Perez. He was a wonderful individual leader to see in motion. And so I would watch, listen, and learn. So I consider him one of my coaches, even though we didn't assign it as a coach. So build that network and learn from those around you, your peers, the community. Watch videos of people that you like to see speak and how their leadership style is. So that is key. And then third, I would say, make sure you have the passion for whatever leadership role you're going in and lead with purpose. If you're chasing a title or a paycheck, the leadership is really the wrong space for you, I've got to say, because it will fall short. Chase that impact and you'll go so much farther. Stay with, if we're talking nonprofit sector, stay mission focused. Stay adaptable and never, ever, ever stop learning.
Never, ever, ever stop learning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you're the person that you're gonna be doing things, reading books, giving seminars up until the last
Yeah, I am, because I mean,
That's
it's just
gonna be you.
a non-business related. When I came to Arizona, and we were going through the pandemic period, and there was the opportunity to do some light road tripping. I called my daughter up and said, "You know what? I'm going to buy us paddle boards so we can get on the lake and start paddle boarding without any prior
Yes.
experience and training." And it looks easy. You look at all these people; they're standing up, and it looks so good. It is not, but I just an example of the desire to learn something new and just going all in. So yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to lose the desire and excitement around learning something new. I mean, even if it's something small, something big, or whatever the case may be, I like, checking out different things. I don't want to stay in the same zone, having tunnel vision my entire life. So yes.
Oh my gosh. Camille Ridley, VP, United Cerebral Palsy Association, Central Arizona. Wow. We're going to get into how people can reach out to you here in a second. But you know, we like to wrap up interviews here on the Nonprofit Insider Podcast with a hashtag nonprofit horror story as a way to shine a light on some of the real challenges that are presented in the nonprofit world. I hear you have a story to share.
Oh my gosh, I have so many. It's a matter of like, okay, which one do I go into? A good chunk of the early stages of my nonprofit focus was on corporate relationships, sponsorships, and events. And during my time in Denver, Colorado, working for Rocky Mountain Children's Health Foundation, we had curated a very successful event. And I see they're now looking for sponsorship for this year's event. And so then it's just gone on. But we had started that out when I came into the agency called Collab. Kaleidoscope. Now, this is a weekend of rest and relaxation at the Ritz-Carlton Denver. And so it's a very luxurious event. So taking the concept of having a gala for just one night, it was over the weekend. And so with that, we would always select a specific winemaker, whether that's from the Napa Valley, whether that's from Washington State. But the wines and the way that the menu went really revolved, the core of that was the wine selection. And so there was a year, I think it might have been 2014, when we had everything, you know, geared up, ready to rock and roll. The delivery for our signature wines was significantly delayed. I mean, we're almost talking down to the wire. The winemaker has flown in. They're doing a mad shuffle to figure out where are these wines at. We need them here. And if they're not going to be able to come in on the cases that were sent, we need to go find some distributor in the city to get those. And that, like, you know, of course, in getting all the beautification and all of the other pieces of this event together, which was very, very complex and complicated, and a lot of staging to have in the backdrop, we may not get the wines that we have selected that are printed on these menus that are very, that have a story to them, because they would be very storytelling oriented wines. What are we going to do here? Like, that just messes everything up. And then we do a wine tasting before the event, and those wines are gone. So we've queued up everybody's excitement and experience around the wines, and we don't know where they're at. So fortunately, we were able to find a distributor that had some of the signature wines that we needed in stock. And shortly thereafter, the truck showed up and delivered. But it really, I'll tell you, you want to talk about what do we do here? And, you know, when you are doing events, you have your plan A and plan B. Now, at that point, we didn't have a plan B on the wines. And that was a big lesson that I learned and carried that through even to this day of event planning.
I feel like, honestly, event planning in and of itself is a horror story.
Oh, it is. I'll tell you what. It truly is. I mean, I love when at the end of it, you're looking at and hearing the experience, but even leading up to that, even if you plan an event 2 years in advance and you've got a great team and all these things going on, there's always going to be at least three to 10 things that did not go according to planning. You have to be able to think on your feet, pivot, and have some alternatives. And in planning, you got to have that, you know, that great, you know, plan B, because anything can happen from transportation to weather. Weather's a big one. I'm not a fan of outdoor events, not in Colorado and Arizona, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
So they are a horror story.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like from all of our guests and even myself in sharing some horror stories, half of them have been related to some type of event.
Yeah.
Because the pressure is on. I mean, this is a one-time thing. It's not like, oh, we're going to do this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or we're going to do this next month. It's a one-time ordeal. So,
yeah.
Again, showing some of the realness, some of the everyday realities that come from being in the nonprofit space. Do you all do events currently at UCB?
We do. We're not, we're kind of on a freeze just for a little while because I'm really working on building the pipeline for events. But we had a Champions Gala that was happening before I started here about 3.5 years ago. We had the final installation in 2021, and we're looking into the future. Like, are we going to host, say, a breakfast type of fundraiser? Or are we going to do, you know, the smaller events that may take place? We're really now focused on the family events. What can we do for our families, for the community, our Breakfast with Accessible Santa, our adaptive basketball clinics, and we've got ideas for a whole other series of events versus doing the fundraising events. So we'll fundraise differently for those, but that is also what I'm hearing from event participants and philanthropists who are saying, I don't want to go and sit at another event, but I would be happy to give you sponsorship for this Breakfast with Accessible Santa for the kiddos, and can I show up and just see what the experience is like? And it's like, absolutely. So that is the direction we're going in, because there's a lot of time, money, and resource that goes into these. And, you know, I feel that my team here and teams everywhere could really benefit from a different type of an event model, because they're tough and they don't always deliver on the results that you truly need. And let's tie up our time in other ways. So I'm not saying I don't like events. I love attending events that I don't always have to plan and enjoying a nice experience, but there's just a lot that goes behind it. And It's exhausting, I'll tell you that. It will wear you down to your core. But again, at the end of that experience, when you hear from the individual who walked and experienced said events, and they're telling you this was amazing, this was magical, and they're tearing up and in such gratitude, it's like, okay, all right, maybe I really do like events more than I did prior. Yeah. So there is the reward in the end, but man, woohoo! And the cleanup, that's a whole nother story. No.
That's a whole nother story. Listen, this has been such an impactful 50, 55, 60 minutes here. Camille, I know people are going to reach out to me or they're going to try to reach out to you. What are some of the ways that people can connect with you if they just want to say hi? Any number of
Yes.
reasons. Support the work
Yes,
you all are
no.
doing, XYZ.
Yeah, if you are on LinkedIn, if you pull up Camille Ridley Phoenix, I will pop up and you can find me there. If you're on Instagram, you can find me at Cami, Cami, Star, Star, Enterprises. That's my alias there. And it really goes through kind of the journey of adventure and other positive matters. And then I'm on Facebook as Camille Rose, one word, Marie, second, third word in that. So Camille Rose Marie. So on any of those sources, feel free. On all of those channels, I stay as enlightened and positive as I can. There's not a lot of drama and mess in there because that's a no can do on my social presence.
Yeah, that's how it is for sure. Got to protect
Yeah.
that self. Well, listen, thank you so much,
Yeah.
Camille, for having you on. You know, you're always welcome here. This is
Oh,
going to
thank
be
you.
a monster episode. People are going to absolutely love everything that you said. You have so many quotables. I'm just in awe. So we'll see you again. And if
Yeah.
you again, if you ever want to come back on, just let me know.
Okay, I'd be happy to at any time. And if you are looking for people that we can talk about that I can recommend for you, I know some amazing individuals that I think would be fabulous guests. So dial me up and we'll talk through it. But Swim, thank you again for inviting me onto the Nonprofit Insider podcast. To me, it's a true honor, and I'm just thankful for you. And I'm thankful for the fact that you are interviewing individuals such as myself so that we can share our story. Because my goodness, I listening into some of your past guests, it helps me keep inspiration, motivation, and also answer some questions that I may have had that I didn't have exact answers to. So I love the fact that you're talking on some light topics and hard topics. When we're talking to play about getting fired in the workplace, like you're being relevant on content that is really meaningful and important. So thank you for having this podcast, for being so successful in it, and for bringing pe great people into the scene.
Well, listen, I think we could just end the episode right there. If you haven't had a chance, be sure to share this with your friends. This is such a good one. We'll see you on future episodes of the Nonprofit Insider Podcast. Thank you, Camille, for being here.
All right, thank you. Be well.
That's it.
Okay, wow. Well,
We're
that time was
decent.
fast. I loved it. That was a great conversation. See, these are the kinds of conversations I like to have in a day.
Yes. It's very, very good. Holy smokes. This is gonna be big. This is gonna be a big episode.